Welcome to the Locked On Steelers podcast. I am your host, Tony Serino, and this is your daily dose of all things Steelers. Crossover Wednesday here on the Locked On Podcast Network. I'll be joined in a minute by Zach and Chris from Locked On Jaguars to preview this Sunday's matchup between the Jaguars and Steelers. A big one. It's a big revenge game for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Of course, they were embarrassed twice last year by the Jaguars. First in the regular season by intercepting Ben Roethlisberger five times and really blowing out the Steelers in a 30-9 victory. And then in that playoff game, maybe even more embarrassing. Closer on the scoreboard, but more embarrassing for Steeler fans watching Blake Bortles and the Jacksonville Jaguars put up 45 points in Heinz Field. I know there's a lot of Steeler fans out there that would love nothing more than to see the Steelers really take it to a weakened Jaguars team on Sunday and you know, make amends for what happened a year ago. I would love it as well. To be honest, I just don't see it in this one. You know, and maybe it's because I went to both Jaguars. The only Steeler games that I saw live last year were the Jaguars regular season game and then the Jaguars playoff games. Maybe I got some PTSD or whatever. I don't see the Steelers blowing them out. I'll be honest. We're going to talk to Zach and Chris about it here in a second. But I think this is going to be one of those stupid games. You know, the Jaguars are so good at getting Ben Roethlisberger into stupid turnovers, especially early in games, and that kind of gives them an early lead and lets them kind of float that early lead throughout the football game. That happened in the playoff game. I mean, the second, it was, you know, there were more second and third quarter interceptions in the first meeting, or third and fourth quarter interceptions in the first meeting. But that being said, I think this game is going to be dictated by the play of Ben Roethlisberger. And really, you know, just the idea of don't beat yourselves in this one. The Steelers, when they play down to their opponents, it's a lot of beating themselves. You know, muffed punts and stupid fumbles and you know, dumb interceptions by Ben and that kind of thing. If they can avoid that, I think they can look, you know, have an impressive victory in Jacksonville. But I just worry this is going to be another stupid game where, I'm not saying they're going to lose the football game, but I think this is going to be much closer than Steeler fans want. I think they, you know, a lot of Steeler fans are out for blood in this one. They want this team to make amends for what happened a year ago. I'm just not so sure it's going to be the case. All right, before we bring in Zach and Chris and talk to them, I do need to do a little news and notes here. Of course, Tuesday was the deadline for Le'Veon Bell to show up and sign his franchise tag to be a member of the team in the 2018 season. And as was reported, he did not show up. So Le'Veon Bell will not be a member of the Pittsburgh Steelers in the 2018 season. The next time we'll talk about him will be when the Steelers season ends in January or February, when we start talking about the moves this team needs to make in the offseason. He will play into that equation, obviously, as the Steelers have some they have some decisions to make about his future and their future with him. But in the meantime, we're going to be talking about the 2018 season. And because Le'Veon Bell did not show up on Tuesday, he just doesn't enter into that equation. So this will hopefully be the last time I have to talk about him here on Locked On Steelers. That being said, let's talk to Zach and Chris about this game against the Jaguars.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Locked On Jaguars, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I am your host, Zach Goodall. Make sure to throw me a follow on Twitter at @Zach_Goodall, as well as my trusty co-host, Misto Cristovo, Chris Thornton. You can make sure to throw him a follow at Misto Cristovo. And today we bring back something we haven't had in a couple weeks from a lack of hosts / a lack of hosts communicating well. Ooh, slight diss. Sorry, Locked On Eagles. Love you guys. Yeah, it wasn't great. But anyway, just messing with those guys. But now for the first time in a couple of weeks, we have a special crossover episode coming your way as the Jaguars are getting ready to take on the Pittsburgh Steelers. And then with that, we have Tony Serino, who is the host of Locked On Steelers, joining us today. You can follow him on Twitter at Steeler Country. He's taken the show over and done a great job in replacing John Ledyard, who's moved on to draft stuff, is the best way to put it. I just don't know if he has the time to talk about the Steelers anymore, but Tony's doing a great job over at Locked On Steelers. So if you guys are looking for information regarding the Steelers that isn't just this crossover episode, I suggest following him on Twitter, Steeler Country. Tony, thanks for joining us tonight.
Yeah, man, happy to be talking to you guys. This is an interesting matchup. I know it's not the kind of marquee matchup it was a year ago. These two teams met in the playoffs, but I'll tell you what, when the schedule was released back in April, there were two games Steeler fans circled on the schedule. One of them, of course, that big game against the Patriots the Steelers will have in about a month from now. But the other one, and not far behind it, is this matchup against the Jacksonville Jaguars. The Steeler team was swept, essentially, by the Jaguars a year ago. And so I think there's a lot of Steeler fans looking for this team to get maybe some revenge. I'm excited to be talking about it with you guys tonight.
Well, I promise you that the odds of the Steelers getting revenge this year are a lot higher right now than I thought they were going to be like 10 weeks ago. Obviously, the script has totally flipped for the Jacksonville Jaguars, but we're going to break down, obviously, the intriguing matchups of the game, one being this high, like, fire-powered Steelers offense. Even without Le'Veon Bell, they're just still moving the ball so well, versus what is still technically the strong point of the Jacksonville Jaguars, that being their defense, despite flaws starting to come the Jaguars defense's way. We broke that down in our last episode. I'm sure we'll talk about it more, but technically it is still the strong part of the team. So in a way, we're going to break down ironing, sharpening iron first. But before we get to that, today was a big day in Steeler country. Le'Veon Bell did not report by a 4 p.m. deadline, so he won't play a single snap for the Pittsburgh Steelers this year. And I just want to ask you, Tony, was that expected, or was there a true belief that there was a chance he was going to come back at some time this year?
I mean, I think, you know, you kind of go back and forth throughout the year. Now, recently, I think most Steeler fans were under the assumption there was no way he was going to play. Once he didn't, you know, he went on ESPN, or he talked to ESPN a couple weeks ago and made mention that he's, you know, he's excited to come back and he wanted to come back during the bye week. And once that didn't happen, and then we started getting into, you know, this deadline, and we got closer and closer to this deadline, I think it became pretty obvious that Le'Veon Bell had no intention. There was that report from Aditi Kumbawala of NFL Network and Mark Caboli of The Athletic that Le'Veon didn't have to show up in order to avoid the third franchise tag in 2019. And again, once that report came out, then it was even more obvious that Le'Veon wasn't going to show up. So now, look, I think Steeler fans are kind of tired of the Le'Veon Bell saga, right? It's will he, won't he show up? And I think today is more of a day of, honestly, celebration from what I've been reading of Steeler fans, of just thank goodness this is over and thank goodness we no longer have to talk about Le'Veon Bell and we can move on, because James Conner has done such a good job. This would be a much different story if the Steelers were struggling on offense, specifically at the running back position, but that just hasn't been the case. James Conner's come in, he's done really well, and you know, he's replaced Le'Veon Bell in a lot of ways.
Now, I have a question to get out there, and I have a belief that doesn't sound like what this question sounds like. Does this entire thing make Le'Veon Bell look, in a way, as a player overrated and maybe a product of a really, really great offense surrounding him? In which case, that could also be the same thing for James Conner. Or is this purely James Conner is ultra talented and they had him in the wings waiting for something like this, and he's going to be one of the future faces of the running back position across the NFL? Because right now he certainly looks like the latter.
Yeah, and I think it's a little of both, right? I think you can't discount the first point, which is that running backs are a dime a dozen. You see these guys who come in, they're not highly touted in the draft. They're drafted in the third, fourth round, Kareem Hunt, Alvin Kamara, right? I mean, we've seen a lot of these guys who come in late, you know, not late rounds, but not necessarily, you know, top five picks in this draft. And they come in and they do really well. So you can't discount that, right? Running back is not a position where you need supreme talent to be great. I think the other point here is, you know, the offensive line for the Pittsburgh Steelers has been tremendous in 2018, and they're opening up holes for Conner to run through that, you know, any running back would be successful now. But, you know, to the second point, right, which is how much of this is James Conner emerging now as a young talent? And I think that can't be discounted, because I think so much of this, it's funny how James Conner has been talked about throughout the year. At first, it was in the shadow of Le'Veon Bell. You know, anytime he would run for, you know, 100 yards, they would compare him to how did Le'Veon do through 1 week in 2017? How did he do through 6 weeks, 8 weeks? And that kind of shifted now, and now it's all of a sudden, well, you know, Conner's more of a product of this offense, and Conner's more of a product of the fact that running back doesn't really matter in the NFL. And look, I think it's a little of both. James Conner has been terrific in two ways in 2018. Number one, he's very good at making people miss, and the kind of forced missed tackle stat from Pro Football Focus, I think he's either leads the league in forced missed tackles or is right there in top two or three, or last I checked. And, you know, look, he's been very good in that way. And he's very, very good as a receiver out of the backfield. You know, he's been very good at, you know, again, that's part of making people miss and getting those yards after catch there. So I think it's a little of both. I think some of this has to do with, yes, when you play with AB and you play with Ben and you play with Juju and you're the running back in that offense, you're going to have some success, especially behind that offensive line. But I don't want to discount what Connor's doing out there because, you know, the Steelers have tried to work in their backups a little bit, Stephen Ridley, Jalen Samuels, and they certainly haven't had James Connor type success. So I think it's a little of both.
And
now,
go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say as a whole, I mean, the offense, obviously there was a bit of a rough start to the season and there were times where Ben looks like he just doesn't have it, but that's happened almost every year. And to give people kind of an idea as to where this offense is at with, you know, people are saying Antonio Brown is still playing at a dominant level, but not at the level that people know him to be. Obviously Ben had a bit of a rough start to the year, but has seemed to bounce back. Where is this offense at in comparison to the past couple of years?
I think this is probably the best Steeler offense they've had in, you'd probably go back to 2014, maybe, to find an offense. The first year that Martavis Bryant really emerged as a threat. I've been saying this for a couple weeks, and I know it sounds really silly, but the Killer Bee era, right, was always this high-flying, you know, they should be scoring 30 points a game. You've got Ben Roethlisberger, you've got Le'Veon Bell, you've got Antonio Brown, you've got three of the best players offensively, and it always felt like they needed a fourth player. And I know that sounds silly when you're talking about the best running back in the league, the best wide receiver in the league, and one of the best quarterbacks in the league, but it did feel like, you know, teams could stack the box against Le'Veon. They could roll coverage to AB side, and it would leave open if they had an elite tight, not even an elite tight end, but just a playmaking tight end or another receiver they could go to. That would really open things up offensively, and they never really had that. I mean, Jesse James has been fine at tight end after Heath Miller retired. At outside receiver, you know, Martavis Bryant got suspended, and so they replaced him with guys like Sammy Coates and Kobe Hamilton, and yeah, these kind of guys who are they're okay, they're fine, but they're not playmakers. Now, in this offense, you add in a guy like Vance McDonald at tight end. You add in Juju and the emergence of Juju in year two, and he has been tremendous year two. Everything Steeler fans wanted from a year one to year two transition. I think we are looking at the best Steeler offense we've seen in some time. Now, preface that by saying every good offense in the NFL is putting up record-setting numbers, right? I mean, the offense around the league has just exploded. In fact, something I want to talk to you guys about when we talk about this Jaguars defense, because I think some of the disappointment in Jacksonville certainly can be, it just feels like the Jaguars are built for the wrong kind of team in 2018, right? I mean, offense rules the day in the NFL, and the Jaguars, unfortunately, are a team built around defense, and that's just not winning football in the modern NFL.
Exactly. Yeah,
that's something that we've discussed several times. They built a 1970s style offense in 2018, and it's not working due to obvious things being that it's a 1970s style offense. But yeah. I wanted to ask you on the Steelers offense. Last week, the Jaguars got torched by tight end Eric Ebron. They let him score 3 touchdowns on the day. Vance McDonald per PFF is top 10 at his position. How have the Steelers offense, how has it utilized McDonald in the past few weeks? And do you think he could have a big game against the Jaguars defense?
He had a breakout game in the playoff game a year ago. He spent so much of 2017 injured. He was a guy they brought in last year and expected him to be kind of a playmaker at tight end, but he just couldn't stay healthy in 2017. That hasn't been the case in 2018. He's been very healthy. And what you see from Vance McDonald, I'm sure you guys will see this on Sunday, he plays with a real physicality. I mean, look, he gets the pub because of that stiff arm he laid on Chris Conte back in the Monday night game. But that is his play to a T. I mean, this guy runs hard, and he's, you know, look, he's a playmaker. He can catch those combat catches. Very good run after catch over the middle. You're going to see that on Sunday. He can definitely have a breakout game. Now, you know, they've been using him sparingly, I think, you know, making sure that they keep him healthy. So you'll see him come in there with Jesse James at times, and they'll give Jesse James some reps as well. I don't think Vance McDonald is going to get a ton of, you know, he's not going to get 100% of the reps in this game because, again, they're going to split with Jesse. But you'll see Vance McDonald playing with a lot of physicality right now, loves to run through defenders, and certainly is not shying away from contact.
Now, who's another guy in this offense that could be poised to have a good game? Because, like you said, there's obviously the main guys. There's Ben hitting Antonio Brown and Juju Smith-Schuster. And there's James Conner in, obviously, both the running game and the passing game. Vance McDonald's kind of broken out as a playmaking tight end. So, obviously, like, there's a lot of different options. And with Pittsburgh, there always seems like there is. But is there someone that, you know, maybe people do sleep on to make some crucial type of plays that could end up being a big problem for an opposing defense, even with one like the Jaguars and the skill that they have there?
Yeah, I think, well, the outside receiver position is where Steeler fans are. They're going to want me to say James Washington or Justin Hunter. But unfortunately, that hasn't been the case so far. I mean, the Steelers, you know, they have Antonio Brown on one side. They have James Washington, their rookie receiver, on the other. Washington was drafted to replace Martavis Bryant and be, you know, the kind of deep threat, take the top off of a defense. He's very good at that in college. And we saw him be very good in preseason at kind of combat catches. It seemed like he was going to have a very good breakout rookie year, the same way Juju did a year ago. He's been really silent throughout. I mean, I think he has like 5 or 6 catches on the entire year. I think the player, if you're looking for someone on this Steeler offense I wouldn't say he's an X factor, but he certainly comes up with big catches at big moments. That's Ryan Switzer, a player the Steelers acquired in the offseason from the Oakland Raiders. He's come in as a kick returner, been very good as a kick and punt returner, and they knew what they were getting there because you can see what he did in Dallas. But he's also been very good as a shifty little fourth receiver. He got a couple big third down catches. He's been big in those moments, making big third down catches. Not going to put up gaudy stats. I think he had 2 catches for 30 yards last week, but they were both on third down, both big third down conversions. So you can look for maybe Ryan Switzer to make some noise in this football game.
And, you know, we're kind of looking at all these guys on the Steelers offense, and we've mentioned guys like McDonald and Antonio Brown, but a guy that kind of can also wreck a game is Juju, a guy that he'd probably be a number one receiver on a lot of teams, but obviously being on the Steelers, he's behind one of the best wide receivers, if not the best wide receiver in football, Antonio Brown. Just tell me a little bit about what Juju's been doing these past few weeks, because I could tell you he started off the game last week with a home or 2 weeks ago with a home run with that 75-yard touchdown pass and kind of fizzled out for the rest of the game a little bit, having a few more catches. But how has Juju been utilizing this offense and kind of what does he bring to the Steelers offense?
Yeah, I think you see he's just such a mismatch at the slot receiver position. You know, teams want to put the slot corner on him. But Juju's physicality just wins out so often there. He's so good at finding open space. And again, he's another good, really good run after catch guy because of his physicality. He's also got the deceptive speed, and you saw that last week against the Carolina Panthers, right? That 75-yard touchdown was something Steeler fans have seen before. If we saw it in the Detroit game a year ago. I mean, Juju is a big play receiver, but he can also be the kind of, I need 3 yards over the middle, let's throw a quick slant, and Juju's got to get inside leverage and make a combat catch over a good corner. He can do that as well, and you know he's becoming very much a well-rounded, like you said, number one receiver in this offense. And, you know, AB hasn't had a great year so far, and I think Steeler fans are waiting for him to get going because, you know, he just hasn't looked like the AB of old. He hasn't had a dominant, you know, the AB game yet, but that's because they haven't needed him to. And it's because of guys like Juju who have emerged on this offense and become reliable targets and have had some really big games. I mean, again, like you said, he might have gone quiet, but I think Juju changed the game against Carolina because remember, the Steelers were down 7-0 at that point. Carolina had gone down the field easily, but Juju erased that lead in one play with a big 75-yarder. So he's been terrific for the Steelers so far.
Now, before we move on to flipping sides here, I want to ask one last question. The Jacksonville Jaguars have obviously removed themselves from Saxonville. They have 19 on the year, and that's far, far behind where they were at this point last year. I think last year at this point they had like 33 or 35. But they silently get pressure. They have 156 on just over 250 pass rushing snaps. Yannick Ngakoue has 39. Malik Jackson's getting interior pressure with 27. Obviously, the Steelers have a good offensive line. They've built a really good one, and I can remember going back a couple of years to where it had taken some time, but they had to build themselves one, and they did just that. How do they handle, other than opening rushing lanes, how do they handle, you know, a pass rush like what Jacksonville can do, where they may not be getting to the quarterback, but they're able to get quick pressure? And how does Ben Roethlisberger react to that, especially at this stage in his career?
Well, that was certainly the storyline in both games last year, right? Was the ability for the Jaguars to get to and rattle Ben Roethlisberger and force him into big turnovers. Certainly in the first game, Ben Roethlisberger threw 5 interceptions, and it was not just the pass rush, but also the coverage there. You know, with Jalen Ramsey had a big game covering AB, and was Telvin Smith also had a big touchdown in the second one. Right, I mean, this was all about getting to Ben Roethlisberger, forcing him into bad throws, forcing him into kind of 50-50 balls where the Jaguars made their big plays. I think that is the big question in this game. Now, I will say the Steelers' offensive line over the past couple weeks has been playing. If they're not the best offensive line in the league right now, I'd love to see a better one, because Ben Roethlisberger basically doesn't get touched in these football games and hasn't had. He really hasn't had a whole lot of pressure. There's times where he can drop back and, you know, he could just sit there and stare at the field all day if he wanted to. So I think the Jaguars defensive line versus the Steelers offensive line, if it looks like it did a year ago, the Steelers could be in for a long day. But if the offensive line comes to play like they have the last month and the Jaguars aren't able to get pressure, I think the Steelers are going to have some success offensively.
All right, and that should just about sum it up for us here, looking at the Steelers' dominant offense versus the Jaguars' not as dominant, but at sometimes still flashy defense. The script has totally flipped for this Jacksonville Jaguars team, obviously, going back to last year. And unlike last year, we can't predict the Jaguars to sweep the Steelers at this point. Well, so when we come back, go ahead.
Sorry.
Well, when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about this Jaguars offense versus the Steelers defense. So looking over to the Jaguars offense, there's literally anything but firepower at this point. The return of Leonard Fournette and his two touchdowns were nice, but it wasn't the greatest game we've seen out of him either. As despite getting 24 carries, he still needed to ease himself into game speed. So, Tony, I kind of want to open it up to you to ask away any questions you have about this Jaguars enigma of an offense. And, I mean, we want to get an idea as to how they compare with the Steelers defense.
Yeah, so, well, I think Steelers fans are going to want to start in one place and one place only. And that is, what are the chances that Steeler fans are going to get to see Landry Jones, their backup quarterback? You guys signed a couple weeks, former Steeler. He was cut in somewhat controversial fashion in Pittsburgh. Now he's a Jacksonville Jaguar. What are the chances? Are there any chance that Steeler fans are going to see him playing in this game at all? Or is Blake Bortles, you know, is he the quarterback right now?
I would go with Landry Jones. If you were asking me about Cody Kessler, who's their pretty cemented number two guy, if you were to say Cody Kessler, I'd give him like a solid like 20% chance. Landry Jones, unfortunately, I think might be like less than 1%. It would require Bortles to either get hurt or benched, and then Cody Kessler to get hurt or benched for Landry to get in there. So, unfortunately for Steelers fans, I don't think your chances of seeing Landry Jones hit the field against his old team, I think it's a very small chance, very, very small, but. So sorry about that one, but I just don't see that happening.
That is too bad. Because I got to tell you, the preseason storylines and that kind of thing, Landry Jones was a full-on controversy in Pittsburgh for a couple days, right up until Le'Veon Bell decided not to show up, and then the conversation in Pittsburgh changed. All right, yeah, let me ask you this about the Jaguars offense, because, you know, when we saw this Jaguars team last year against the Steelers, they scored, the last time this team played the Steelers, they scored 45. Now, you know, I think 14 of that was off of turnovers. Blake Bortles did not look bad in that game. I mean, they had some real success in this one. I know you guys are down on the Jaguars this year, but given the success the Jags had against the Steelers in the playoff game last year, is there any hope that they can, you know, they certainly were using the misdirection or using the Steelers' aggression against them and using that kind of the miscommunication in the secondary against them. They had some big plays in that football game, guys wide open in the flat, able to get big yards after catch. Is there any feeling in Jacksonville that they can kind of replicate that level of success again, especially in a home game?
No, I don't think so. Really, at this point, there just isn't much optimism that we can carry with this Jaguars offense. Blake Bortles has had a much regressed year compared to his 2017 season, which was flashy at times, but still, for the most part, inconsistent and was carried by a run game and a defense to... I still question why he was kept around as a starter and no competition was brought in. It just doesn't make any sense. They bought in way too easily. And with that, you just can't predict anything good to come from when he's under center. You can get it sometimes, don't get me wrong. And I think this game this past week was one of the best he's had in 5 weeks since I'd say probably the Jets game. And it's just that it's so inconsistent and as of late so poor that you can't predict anything good to happen. Even if the run game is there to help him, you then start talking injuries. the offensive line is so banged up. You've got two offensive linemen on the IR for the rest of the year, that being starting left tackle Cam Robinson and starting center, and the best offensive lineman they have, Brandon Linder, both suffered bad knee injuries that got him out for the year. Cam Robinson's backup is on IR. He is eligible to return in, I think, week 14, something around there. So they took a converted right guard, put him at left tackle, had never played left tackle in his life. And in five games, he's allowed the third most pressures among offensive tackles in the NFL. So obviously it's just not getting, you know, done well up front. There are guys doing a decent job, like Andrew Norwell, I think, has done a much better job than the fan base will talk him up to have done. Jeremy Parnell is aging. He's just not really got a ton of speed to react to rushers anymore and is allowing a lot of pressure from it. AJ Cann's been really inconsistent. So the offensive line is not helping Blake. It's not helping the run game. The receivers are getting open, but they're not catching the ball. The Jaguars lead the league in drops. So all in all, there's just so many different factors. And I do think that quarterback is the most important because it's the heaviest weighted of all offensive roles at this point in this game in 2018, how the football works. But there's so many problems to go around that you just can't predict this Jaguars team to even in an advantageous matchup take advantage of what they're given at this point.
You have a rebuilt wide receiver core a little bit. Dante Moncrief brought in, DJ Chark drafted, that you guys let go of Allen Robinson, let him go to the Chicago Bears. How's that worked out? I mean, as the I know you guys said Blake hasn't played well so far, but has that been just because of Blake or the, you know, the wide receivers are contributing there?
It's pretty even on both sides. Blake isn't the best quarterback, so he's kind of going to need all the help he can get, and his receivers haven't necessarily done that this year. Like Zach said, lead the league in drops. A lot of times, Blake, although he doesn't have it doesn't happen a whole lot, Blake will put some pretty spot-on throws and some big-time plays and some scenarios, and the wide receivers just flat-out drop him, killing drives, not scoring touchdowns, all that jazz. So offensively, they've been struggling with a lot of things, just the offensive line struggling, Blake struggling. But even when Blake is throwing good passes, the wide receivers aren't helping him out by catching it. So there's a lot of things. At the beginning of the year when the team let go of Mercedes Lewis, I was for the move. I didn't think he was needed. But in hindsight, I think Mercedes Lewis as a safe pass-catching tight end and a blocker, especially as a blocker, I think he's being greatly missed now, a Green Bay Packer. He's being greatly missed in Jacksonville at this point in the season.
You guys made mention of the fact that Leonard Fournette's going to play in this game. He's been hurt all year, killing my fantasy team, by the way. He had a great game in the playoff game a year ago. He really had a great game in both. He had like a 90-yarder in the first one that kind of padded his stats at the end after that game was over. Is he healthy now? Is this a Leonard Fournette that's going to be able to take, you know, a lot of snaps in this one, or is he kind of on a pitch count at this point with TJ Yeldon? What's the status of Leonard Fournette going into this game?
They don't seem to want to put him on a pitch count. That's what Doug Marrone said, that at this point, especially considering it was at when he said this, a four game, now a five game losing streak. If you're available, like you gotta go. You gotta give it your full effort at this point. Was that a shot at Fournette? Maybe, because there were rumors and speculation that the team was really frustrated with the way that he's handled recovering from an injury that really should not have taken been an 8-week process at this point. That's why they traded for Carlos Hyde. So as long as he's available, they want to put him in. I don't think he's up to speed. And I think we could see that he had 24 carries for something in like the 50-yard range this past week. He did score two touchdowns. So if you had him in your fantasy lineup, he probably got you a lot more points than his play would have suggested he deserved, just because he didn't look up to speed. He wasn't making cuts. He had to run with power, and that worked because that's his mantra. That's just what he does. But when he was trying to be elusive and going outside and trying to cut up, it wasn't there. So I don't know if that's just the injury still bothering him or if he just needs time to catch up to game speed, but I think he at least needed to, you know, shake the rust off, and we'll see where he can go this week.
And then how are TJ Yeldon, Corey Grant? I mean, those were guys again who had a lot of success in the playoffs for the Jaguars last year. How are they being worked into the offense at this point?
Well, Grant actually against Kansas City suffered a Liz Frank injury and is out for the year and maybe longer, but it's okay because he was a non-factor at this point in the year anyway. So TJ Yeldon filled in for Fournette pretty well. He is a really solid receiving type of back, pass protecting back, pretty solid runner. He's really developed his vision really, really well since he was drafted in the second round a couple of years ago. And he did a good job. I think he filled in really well. I think he's going to be a really good committee back. And Chris came up with this theory, and I second the theory, that he is going to be someone's consolation prize in free agency this year that doesn't win out on the Le'Veon Bell sweepstakes. So I think he'll end up having a role somewhere else. It might really start to shrink with Fournette being back. We'll see. I think there's definitely a role for him in this offense when the ball is moving, but then again, it's an issue of the Jaguars aren't moving the ball.
I mean, you made mention of the fact that the offensive line somewhat in shambles due to injury. Is it a situation where Bortles is just under pressure, most downs, and it has to get rid of the ball quickly or eat sacks or just, you know, forced into bad decisions, that kind of thing?
You can go ahead with this one, Chris.
I was going to say, from the left side, the blind side, he is under constant duress on that side, usually averaging about 7 or 8 pressures a game from that side, whoever's on that side. But the thing with Blake Bortles is usually he's like a two-read kind of guy. He doesn't really have that it factor to where he can kind of keep looking, waiting for a play to develop. If his first two reads aren't there, and they're usually pretty quick reads because Nathaniel Hackett at this point just has to resort to short crossers and the offensive line can't block long enough to take shots down the field, it's either first two reads or he tucks in and runs. So that hasn't been helping for his case, the offensive line not allowing him to either go through his reads if he were to even try, or to set back and take shots down the field. So I think that has really hurt him this year, because losing Cam Robinson in the second game of the season against the Patriots for the year, and then just having a really bad left tackle play after that. Now he loses his center, Brandon Linder, for the year with an undisclosed knee injury. So you're down two stars in your offensive line, in a line that was already struggling to begin with. The entire right side's basically a no factor, really. They're really hit or miss. So I would say that that's probably a contributing factor on top of a lot of other things, but it definitely hasn't helped Blake Bortles with how the offensive line's been playing this year.
So what's it going to take for this Jaguars team to beat the Steelers? I mean, especially offensively for the Jaguars.
The Steelers to implode.
Literally a miracle.
The Steelers not showing up, a forfeit.
I love this confidence. I mean, look, I tell you, Steelers fans they need this win just, you know, to get. I mean, yeah, you know, the Steelers again, they're swagger back, right? I mean, they're 6-2-1. But I tell you what, this game, getting it back from the Jaguars, this is a big game for a Steelers fan. So happy to hear how confident you guys are going in. No, but look, this is a Jaguars team that, you know, again, they struggled to score a touchdown against the Buffalo Bills and then went into Pittsburgh and scored 45. I know you guys are down on this offense, but the Steeler defense does leave a lot to be desired at times. Now, they have played really well over the past month. I'm not going to take that away from this defense. They didn't play well at the beginning of the year, but they have played well in the last couple weeks. But this is not a wholly changed defense from what the Jaguars faced a year ago, especially in the front seven, where the Jaguars offensive line and the Jaguars running game had a ton of success, and they really beat up a very good Steeler defensive line. Cam Hayward, Stephon Tuitt were non-factors in that game. Sean Spence, who was the inside linebacker at that time, I mean, he had no idea where to be from play to play. And Leonard Fournette and that offense really ate up the Steelers. And I'm here to tell you, look, the Steeler defense is playing better. Are they susceptible to going on the road to Jacksonville and having a down game, especially in that front seven? I think yes. So I know you guys are down on this team, and there's certainly, you know, from you guys talking about the offensive line and how Fournette doesn't look like himself right now. Maybe this is not the right time for the Jaguars to play this well and have this kind of upset. But I wouldn't be surprised if we watch another Leonard Fournette kind of run the ball down the Steelers' throat, 4 or 5 yards a carry, control the game. The Steeler offense kind of sputters against a defense that, you know, look, let's just be honest here. They have had Ben Roethlisberger's number for the past two games, especially the first one in the first half of the second game as well. I'm not going to be surprised if the Jaguars are at least competitive in this football game.
All I can say for us here at Locked On Jaguars is we sure hope so. And I think that should just about do it for our crossover episode here today with Locked On Steelers and Locked On Jaguars. Tony, thank you so much for coming on with us. If you have any other work that you would like to plug away for our listeners, go ahead and do that.
Yeah, check me out on Locked On Steelers, LockedOnSteelers.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Steeler Country. And I had a lot of fun talking to you guys tonight.
We appreciate you coming on. And you guys can make sure to stick around this week as we'll bring you more content both on the Locked On Jaguars site and through podcasts through our beautiful voices at Locked On Jaguars Podcasts. Make sure to subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher. Anywhere you can find podcasts, you can find us. And we will catch up with you guys later.